I'll tell a tale, 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 yeah. Of Maccabees in Israel, L, yeah. When the Greeks tried to assail, sail, yeah. But it was all to no avail, veil, yeah, yeah. The war went on and on and on until the mighty Greeks were gone, yeah.
I put my lock just in the air sometimes, saying hey, oh.
All right, that was a new Hanukkah song. Good for them that you could come up with such a lovely music and tune and ideas. Anyway, we bless the candles. We are ready to go because we need more of those miracles. When God sends them, we love them. So I hope that we're going to have some soon. Anyway, in the situation of, in the Middle East, you need a miracle every day. But sometimes we have our friends and our, colleagues working some plans to have a different plan. Now, there was a big hoo-ha on the Christmas Eve, and I don't believe that this is acceptable because anytime you summon the world leaders, Christmas Eve or any other holiday on the eve of it, it's no good. I would suggest that they go and cook, be with their family, and not try to cook a war in the Middle East. But that's what they did. They had a big meeting, United Nations. Let's listen to what we have from there.
In a rare show of unity, the UN Security Council passed judgment on Israeli settlements.
14 votes in favor.
Voting that they'd become a serious threat to a viable peace deal with the Palestinians. It was that conviction which led the U.S. to withhold its customary protection of Israel at the Council, although not without much soul-searching.
Because there are important issues that are not sufficiently addressed in this resolution, and because the United States does not agree with every word in this text, that the United States did not vote in favor of the resolution.
The Israelis had managed to delay but not prevent the vote. They felt betrayed by their ally, especially angry about condemnation of their construction in occupied East Jerusalem.
Who gave you the right to issue such a decree, denying our eternal rights in Jerusalem?
Israel has long pursued a policy of building Jewish settlements on Arab land captured during the 1967 war. It insists it has the legal right to do this, but most of the world disagrees, and the UN resolution will make that argument even more difficult. Halting settlements was the focus of President Obama's attempts to broker peace. He failed twice. Resorting to the UN was his final act. The Palestinians embraced this as a victory for international law. But they can't expect the same from Mr. Obama's successor, Donald Trump, who sided with the Israeli government on this. The UN resolution could become a reference point for further moves against Israel in international forums, but not for the next U.S. administration. Barbara Platt-Usher, BBC News, Washington.
All right. Okay, let's listen to what's going on. First of all, we have Christmas Eve, they have a resolution saying that, the settlement, all the building of post or housing in the disputed territory is against the wish of the United Nations. Okay, that's something that it's not new. Then the ambassador, she said, the American ambassador said, oh, we would, we'll support it if it wasn't everything, up to date. But something she did, and she said something that was wrong. She said and claimed that five presidents of the USA were against the settlement. Settlement being like every people that go in and build a house in the free land that nobody has it, that they call settler. Okay, so we have a little land and, of course, going extra board to protect it, it's normal. But her idea that five presidents, including Reagan, and she included Reagan, were against settlement, was wrong when she included Jerusalem. President Reagan completely was for Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. He said, I'm not going to ask Israel to remove from Jerusalem her, you know, her capital. And that's in 1982, his plan, a peace plan. So if the ambassador had some information, she would go there and she would find that she misquote. Using misquote is wrong. Voting absentee to any resolution of United Nations, it's not relevant because as far as I'm concerned, what are they going to do about it? It's like, okay, did you do anything about Syria? What about Sudan? What about Iraq? What about the refugees everywhere? Do you have any supplies? Do you have any inspector in Africa? United Nations, who are you? Pooh, you're not there. You're not relevant. So you took people out of their family on the Christmas Eve, and you called also, you know, Hanukkah Eve for the our ambassador. And he called, oh, Jerusalem is occupied land by the Jews, the one, the old, the Bible. If you come close to any Judean Christian belief, you understand that the Bible is the belief and the framework of any kind of faith that come from the Judean Christian. Now, the United Nations come and call the Christianity or the Judaism a fake. You have to understand why. First of all, just imagine that people say that your religion doesn't hold water for them because that's what they decided. It doesn't matter what the book said. You are not there. United Nations has no, it's not about decree. It's not about the saying. They have no faith, and that's the worst. Now think about that, okay? The liberal agenda worldwide that we are finishing in this storm that we all had to go through worldwide was a liberal agenda. It's the one that says, you know, remove women, you know, make them free, blah, blah, blah. Get them all, you know, half naked just so, you know, you can be lavishly around, you know, you uncover them. Just all the conservative agenda needs to be dead. That's their plan. God has no space in school. In America, they already did that. In the court, you know, you swear on the Bible, but you cannot put the Ten Commandments in the courtroom, which is ludicrous, you know, by that. Then you say, God has no space in the school, in any place, in politics, and of course, oh, don't talk in God in your house with friends. God in politics, it's like against the comfort of your zone. So the liberal agenda wanted to eradicate God. We have a fact of this. All those WikiLeaks, you know, stuff from the Clinton administration, they say, oh, Russian went into our emails to see that he wanted to eradicate God from everywhere, and God eradicate you all, the Democrats, from everywhere. That's what you have to see. And now the United Nations wanted to eradicate God again. And it's nothing to do with two people living a place. Now think about peace. You have peace in America, right? You have you go to a quarter. You have Mexican quarter, Chinese quarter, Italian quarter, Jewish quarter. Everyone has his own quarter. Everybody's happy. We go and we shop. We eat together. We go. We cross each other in the mall. Blah, blah, blah. We're all happy. We marry each other sometimes. We not marry each other. We go. We dance. Nothing. That's freedom. That's liberty. That's peaceful coexistence. But no, you put two Jewish people in a village, Arab village, they'll slaughter them because no Jew is allowed to live among us. Ooh, what a kind of religion are you? You're monsters. If you know, if you think that anybody that else needs to die, that's a monster. That's what we're talking about radical Islam, right? So anytime you tell me that you cannot have 40 family, a community, near a community of Arabs, it's not just racial, it's not just, you know, bigots, it's bad politics, because it's not freedom and it's not peaceful. So the United Nations, by all means, at that position that she took on the eve of holiday, of all the world holiday, she didn't, couldn't care less, to just tell you my point indeed. She didn't want God to celebrate, right? We didn't want, and nobody wanted to celebrate God. She wanted us to all fight our to-do. We celebrate, all right. We went and we'd be fine. Of course, Prime Minister got, you know, annoyed big time. But it's funny that he got annoyed when he knows the drill. So I'm telling you guys, United Nations, you're irrelevant. You mean that cutting the funds? No, stop joining them. And who are those people from Europe that joined them? What a club of ludicrous, or how they say in American politics. What a bunch of clowns. All right? That's it is. That's what they are, and they're not going to last for long because they become irrelevant. Now, one point is really important that I have to mention. Everybody was talking about they're going to sue Israel over 2014 war in Gaza. Really? Where UNRWA, the United Nations branch in Gaza, passed missiles to Hamas, that's what they're going to sue Israel upon? Because we have proof. We have pictures. We have everything on that. And you guys going to go down because that's helping people in war. European, what was it? The UNRWA? Yeah, something for something that is nothing? That's what we have. United Nations that it's for nothing. God help you guys, because from now on you are done and by all books. Now, poor babies that they have to go through this and suffer, but I hope they have a vacation, because, you know, having so much nonsense running in one place can take you wacko. And especially, you know, that ambassador to the UFO, probably you should call upon them to take them all in space. Let's get some music and we'll be back after that.
As around the sun, the earth, no, she's revolving. And the rosebuds know to bloom in early May. This is ain't no love's a cure. You can rest your mind assured.
And that was George Michael. May he rest in peace. We lost him, and you know, in a day ago, and everybody was listening today to his music, telling how beautiful and how wonderful he was, and how graceful. And you know, to leave the world in a high holiday means that it was really sad, and we really, really will miss him. But I would listen to his music, and I will try my best to keep him in my prayer. So God bless his soul. Now let's keep on going. What we had, we have a situation, another crash of a Russian airplane. Let's listen to that.
Muscovites laid floral tributes at the headquarters of the famed choir as President Vladimir Putin declared that Monday would be a national day of mourning. Founded in 1928, the Alexandrov Ensemble was a symbol of Russia, performing not only in war zones but also to music lovers at concert halls across the world. In St. Petersburg, where he was meeting the leader of Kazakhstan, President Putin looked visibly shaken by the tragedy. "I'd like to express deep condolences to the families of our citizens who died this morning in the Black Sea. A special commission headed by the Minister of Transport will closely investigate the circumstances of the crash, and everything will be done to support the families of the victims." A day of mourning will be observed tomorrow across Russia.
All right, we feel sorry because there were a lot of art, humanity on that plane. The people on that plane were a part of orchestra. They were assembled together to, you know, for the holiday, to entertain the troops in Syria, people that went to war, and you have those musicians that come and say something nice to you, make a joke, or just, you know, sing to you. Let's listen to some music they used to make. So you understand all the Russian choir orchestra on that plane with a lady humanitarian that she was very, very famous for her work, and I failed to remember her name at this point. But condolences to everybody. And, you know, this war has been crazy everywhere. It's been taking so many lives all over across the world. And it's really devastating because we need to turn this page on history. And, you know, when the Pope Francis was talking about turning a page on history, finishing the war in Syria, he was right. But as far as the settlement, as far as the Israeli-Palestinian go, we need to just check the facts a little more. Let's listen to that.
This is me driving in what I think is one of the most bizarre places in the world. I just crossed over from Israel into the West Bank. If you look at a map of where I'm driving right now, you'll see a jumbled mess of Palestinian towns and villages, which are shown in green, and Israeli settlements, which are in blue. Many people think of this territory as Palestine. But of the 3 million people living out here, almost 20% of them are Jewish Israeli citizens. The Israelis living out here are called settlers. They live in the West Bank, but they're citizens of Israel. As I drive, I'm looking at effectively two different nations woven into each other through decades of conflict. I visited 15 settlements all over the West Bank, talking to people who have decided to pack up and move out into the middle of disputed land. We'll meet them in coming videos, but first I want to take a look at the maps that help explain how the West Bank got to look like this. So let's go back to 1948 when the map looked a lot different. Back then, all this land was controlled by Great Britain. And due to growing tensions between Jews and Arabs, the UN worked with Britain to split the land into two states, one for Jews, Israel, and another one for Arabs, Palestine. The Jews in the region accepted this plan and declared independence of the State of Israel. But the Arab states in the region saw this plan as just more European colonialism. They didn't accept the plan and instead declared war on Israel. Israel won the war, pushing well past the borders of the UN plan. During the peace negotiations, a ceasefire line was drawn in green ink. It became known as the Green Line. It wasn't necessarily a border, it was just a ceasefire line, with this being the state of Israel, and this section being controlled by Jordan, who had taken control of it during the war. The Jordanians named this newly seized land the West Bank because it was west of the Jordan River. The fragile ceasefire remained until 1967, when Israel fought another war with its Arab neighbors. Israel wasn't looking to take over land in this war, but in just 6 days of fighting, it blew past the Green Line and seized a whole swath of land, including the entire West Bank. Suddenly, Israel had a decision to make. Do they make the West Bank a part of Israel and give the 1.1 million Arabs living there Israeli citizenship and voting rights? Do they give the land back to their enemy Jordan? Or else do they let the people create their own Palestinian state? This became a major debate in Israeli politics. Many Israelis saw this war they just won as not just a military victory, but a religious sign that the Jews were meant to return to the place where a huge amount of Jewish history happened. The hills of the ancient Judea and Samaria, which is basically the entire West Bank. So while the government was debating what to do, Israeli civilians began moving into the West Bank without any permission from the government. They just started setting up homes, establishing a Jewish presence in this region. Suddenly, any debate about what to do with the West Bank had to take into account the growing number of Israeli civilians that were living there. But the rest of the world did not approve of this. As the settler presence grew, the UN issued a resolution saying that the settlements had no legal validity and that they constitute a serious obstruction to achieving a comprehensive, just, and lasting peace in the Middle East. They were basically saying that this settler activity was totally illegal. Two different narratives emerged here. One said that Jewish civilians were moving on to mostly empty plots of land that they had captured in a war and that had deep historical and spiritual significance to them. The other side, which is the side that most of the world took, said that these settlers were colonizing land to expand their nation. In spite of international condemnation, the number of settlers in the West Bank grew. Over the next few decades, more and more factions of the Israeli government began to support the settler movement, allocating public resources and granting permits for building. The Israeli housing ministry and military began developing plans on how to develop the West Bank. They built roads throughout the entire region, allowing easy access between the settlements and mainland Israel. More and more building permits were given out, and planned communities began popping up all over the West Bank. The settlements slowly shifted from a fringe group of motivated civilians to an institutionalized part of Israeli society, totally supported by the state. Here are the Palestinian towns in the West Bank. Watch how the settlements weave throughout these Palestinian towns. Palestinians didn't like this encroachment. They began protesting, often with extreme violence. Between the violence and the condemnations from the international community of the settlements, the situation became unsustainable. So, in the mid-1990s, American President Bill Clinton, Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, and Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat signed the Oslo Accords, agreements that established a Palestinian government and split the West Bank into three sections. Area A gave Palestinians total control over security and government. This makes up about 18% of the West Bank, but most of the Palestinian population centers are here. This was a big deal because it gave Palestinians self-rule for the first time. Area B was designated for Palestinian government control while retaining Israeli security control, meaning the Israeli military remains very present there. Area B is about 22% of the West Bank. Area C remained completely under the Israeli military and government control. This is where all the settlements are in Area C. It's about 60% of the West Bank. So this is basically how we ended up with this mess of a map. Israelis can come and go from mainland Israel through really nice roads that go straight to the settlements. They call these roads flyovers because they bypass Palestinian villages and give easy access from one settlement to the other. But not every settlement has one of these flyover roads. Palestinians can drive on almost all the roads in the West Bank, but their movement is often more difficult, more restricted. They have to stop at checkpoints and get their car inspected sometimes. Sometimes it makes for some really long lines. But certainly one of the most difficult aspects of this carved up land situation is how it hinders Palestinians from being able to build an economy. Area C, which is under Israeli control, contains the majority of the West Bank's agricultural land, as well as the water and mineral resources. Palestinian companies are severely restricted in accessing these resources, which takes a huge hit on their economy. So with these three sections agreed upon by both sides, the settlements continued to grow in Area C. But in 2005, something happened that would ignite even more passion for the settler movement in Israel. Prime Minister Ariel Sharon decided to remove 8,500 settlers from the Gaza Strip, which was another disputed area where there was a lot of settlements. Seeing Israelis forcibly evicted, their homes demolished, left a huge mark on the country, especially the settlers. They immediately redoubled their effort to settle the West Bank, and the numbers continued to grow. Most people who think about a resolution to this conflict propose a two-state solution, meaning giving the Palestinians a state somewhere in this West Bank region. But if you look at this map, you can start to see that it's getting harder and harder to do that. The settlers living in the West Bank are not living in tents or caravans. They're living in developed communities with schools and hospitals and even a university. It's not going to be that easy to uproot these communities. In the next video, I'll go inside the settlements and talk to the people who are living there.
Jewish people have come home. That's not going to change.
Who are these nutcases who are moving out of their own will into this battle zone? They fail to realize the lifestyle that we actually have here.
I don't consider myself a settler, maybe, but I know other people do just because I cross a certain line and I go through a certain post.
You understand what they have to go. You know, if you cross the line in the sand, it's not a border, there is no country, you're a settler. It's amazing. But let's do some math. You know, in the old world, there is one thing we all understand: business. So let's talk Turkey. When you have a war, you have a lot of refugees. And of course, the refugees today are Muslims. But the refugees of the Second World War were Jewish. Major part, the one that survived from the Holocaust, and the others from the Arab nations. The Jewish people used to live in the Arab nation like Libya, like my ancestors, in Jordan, in Iraq, in Iran, in Syria, in all Europe, of course, in Russia, in Lebanon, and in Egypt, and Morocco, Tunisia. Once the war started, they start being prosecuted by their Arab neighbors, and sure enough, they had to flee. Being refugees at that time gave them the title to go and look for other land. However, on the back, in the Arab land, they left houses, a lot of resources, and businesses. And of course, they lose life. A lot of people got killed, but in the process, but they evacuate real fast. And they were smart because they knew that life is more important than money. So they left. And what happened is all the Arab nation just took over their houses and everything. So now when they come back and they tell me, we have, settlers that sitting on our land, I said, wait a minute. I have 800 to a million, to a million people, 800,000 to a million people that evacuated from our land, leaving behind tons of money. And you know, the Jewish are wealthy people usually, right? Tons of houses, businesses, didn't get compensated. I want to get compensated. It's about time. You want to talk peace. I don't know if you can finish one war before you start negotiating the peace settlement. So let's start, the Palestinian event came after, when globalization started moving, they invented this ideas of Palestinian land, the people who leave. We don't really know who they are. They are kind of mercenary. They leave by the land. They move. They live in other places. Let's say the truth. We don't know who those Palestinians. They live in refugees clubs that the United Nations give them in Gaza. Gaza free and clear, not the Israeli. And they could have situated economic economic venue. They could do stuff there, but they didn't because they're excavating tunnels to the next war, which they lose because God is on our side. God is on the side of the goods. And when you try to dismiss the good, that's what happened to you. You go away. Now let's keep on going. I have 1 million refugees from Arab lands. Refugees by title. I settled them in. I want compensation. Now I have 500,000 of settlers sitting and living in a land that is disputed. Let's call it that this is 500,000 from the million. I need to build 500,000 more. Do we get that clear? That land we take back because we lost. That's the only asset of Arab asset that we can take. It's mathematic, it's money, it's negotiated, and it's negotiable, of course, but I need more 500,000. Those 500,000 that already exist, it's our, it's taken. Now, anybody who would think that, economy doesn't make a factor in this whole thing, think again, not for me and not for you. Now, let's get the grip of what's going to happen. Now, the Palestinian, if they wanted to have a country, they would. They wouldn't send, people from the Israeli government, Israeli Knesset, the Arab-Israeli in the Knesset, to go and give cell phone with SIM card to convicted felons of terrorism. We just caught last week a member of Knesset that smuggled 15 cell phone to convicted terrorists. Now, would you think that Israeli need to trust those Arab lists in the Knesset? What do you think? All right, let's tell them to stop threatening us all. We have a new days. It's a new rules. Of course, Mr. Obama did so much to the world. He earned the Nobel Peace Prize. He had a resolution that doesn't make sense. It's fine. It's fine. It's another resolution of thousands that they made. They made every day one for Israel. They forgot to do anything for the rest of the world. They didn't take care of Sudan. They didn't take care of Syria. They didn't take care of the refugee in Jordan. They didn't do anything. The United Nations is worthless. And you guys are keeping spending your money on them. What are you thinking? You want to abolish something? Abolish the United Nations. And you know, back in 2004, when they asked me if I should abolish United Nations, I didn't say nothing. I was against it. Today, I redeem myself. Yes, let's abolish them. All right, let's get some music and we'll be back after that. What a great song. You know, I never heard it before. I can't believe myself. But, you know, I guess I was kissing a fool because it's awesome. It's awesome. George Michael, why you had to die so early, God? Everybody is, you know, we're losing so many great ones. I hope that you have your loved one with you. Keep them close. Love them. Tell them you love them again and again and again. Never quit, okay? And we have more to talk about. What are we going to talk? We're going to pray together. We're going to talk about the story, about the incredible challenge that we all have. Let me show you, or let me describe to you the scene that I see involved in the region now. We have the incredible war in Syria. it's about to wind down. The attack on the Russian plane or not attack, the attack on the Russian ambassador, it's too close, it's getting a little sensitive there. It can ignite if Russia will be sensible about it and will make it go crazy. But I don't think that anybody wants to do that, because we have a new elected president that everybody is waiting, really waiting, to see him through and help him become the best president ever, because he's going to be the president of everybody else. The world needs a leader. The European Union is in a mess. You know that Prime Minister Netanyahu canceled a meeting with the Premier of England, because when you vote against the same resolution, actually, you help create the State of Israel. It's really, somebody has to read it to them, because they're voting on what, you know, there is a God and it's not them. So Netanyahu's job is to keep this nation safe, and that's what he's done. And England is losing ground on this behalf, because they could, through Netanyahu, they could understand a lot of businesses' idea around here. And of course, Germany is in a mode from election to after attack, which was devastating again for them. And I'm sure that everybody understand that, you know, Islamism, extreme Islam, is not something to play with. Then we have, so the European Union is not steady. Italy, of course, just got rid of their premier. I don't know why this referendum was not the point, but he left, leaving all open promises to rebuild those houses that were in shambles from the earthquake. So Europe is in shambles, kind of. We have a new president in the UN, started very bad. Okay, so I'm calling again to abolish that body. We're talking about England. England is going to be okay. We're going to have a lot of work to do. But if she plays right, she's going to be okay, with Ireland playing great. Now we have more threat that we need to be concerned with around the globe. I don't want to mention it, but there are others. And we want to have, sweep understanding of what's the, you know, job creation is going to be once the infrastructure is going to be starting to build in America. And the wall defense is going to be built to safeguard American from terrorists, from smuggling of drugs and all, from illegal weapons, all this kind of assault weapon that smuggles back and forth to all South America. I think that it's a good thing. I'm sure that we're going to have a new day. I'm looking forward to help, to assist, and to be a part of this amazing, amazing day that's going to happen. Now it's Hanukkah again. I wish you light in your house. I wish you light in your life, a lot of greatness, happiness, and good stuff for all of you to come. Just remember, make a prayer. We're all the same people. Doesn't matter what, you know, God created us different to make the music more interesting. So let's play that music. God bless you all. From me, Orly Benny Davis, and this is Impossible Truth. Blessing you all, and thank you, Doug and Donald Newsom, for being wonderful this year all around. God bless you guys. Okay, so let's finish with a song. God bless you. Ciao, ciao.